This week in the other Bundesliga, we had a one-sided Saturday, some crucial comebacks at the top of the table, more variable VAR interpretations, and a sigh of relief for the two capital clubs. Hello and a very warm welcome to the other Bundesliga podcast. My name is Tom Midler. I'm joined again by Lee Wingate, and we're both here at the Long Hall Pub and Kitchen in Vienna, tucked in the city centre behind the City Hall, the best place in the fair city to come and get some food and drink. There's a lovely garden here, but it is safe to say today we are not using that. It's wet. It's a bit cold. Summer's gone, hasn't it, Lee?
Yeah, this is the first day of the end of summer, if that's such a thing. It is raining pretty heavily outside, and it actually makes this pub feel a lot cozier, though, somehow. Being stuck in the corner of the pub with a pint, it feels like I'm ready for winter.
Yeah, nice warm wood, warm decor. It feels very cozy. You're right, yeah. Got pints in hand, ready to talk about some Austrian football. Yes, everything very comfy. Would you not say that the last day of summer, or the end of the summer, is not the start of the autumn? It doesn't even feel like that, does it? It's just grey and cold suddenly after being really hot for a suspiciously long time.
You're probably right. I think I didn't really have the time to think about what was the correct way to describe the seasons.
Fair enough.
I'll give you that.
Well, I just bashed my beer against the microphone as well, so if you heard that, I apologise. If you're feeling very generous and you want to buy us a beer for our next visit to the Long Hall, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/other Bundesliga. In this case, it would be buy us a coffee, because obviously we are three people, the other Bundesliga, just two of us here today, but it's buymeacoffee.com/other Bundesliga. For right now, though, at the Long Hall, we're here to talk about the Austrian Bundesliga and a bit of European football too. Let's start, by coincidence really, with the three teams who are in European contention for Austria, because they all had quite interesting games in the Bundesliga this weekend. And the place to start, perhaps, is with Salzburg. They had an away trip to high-flying Austria Klagenfurt, and they threw away a two-goal lead, which is something you can't say happens that often to Red Bull Salzburg.
No, but then again, it's not the first time we've said that this season, is it, after the whole debacle against Blau-Weiß Linz. The fact that this has now happened again so soon suggests that they are having a bit of a stumble, because, of course, the European result didn't go their way either. I wonder what's wrong there, really, to be honest.
Yeah, it really springs to mind for me the game that we were talking about last week, when it was the Vienna derby and Rapid were playing against nine men and they couldn't find a way through. And we said, look, in almost any other context in Austrian football, even against Salzburg, you'd be disappointed if they were, if you were outnumbering them and you weren't able to turn things around or at least sort of dominate the game. And this was a great example we had here, because Salzburg were 2-0 up halfway through the first half. You thought, okay, comfortable win incoming, 2-0 up away from home, cruising. They scored, I think, in the seventh minute. It was Simic who finished off a nice move, and then there was a bit of a defensive error. Benatelli accidentally sort of passed the ball back. I think he thought, after Klagenfurt should have got it clear, that he was going to find a defender who could boot it away, but instead he actually passes the ball right back into the box for Forson Emankwa to finish off. 2-0, Salzburg cruising. Klagenfurt had two goals ruled out for offside at this point, including one wonderful finish from Sinan Karvainer, who's having a great season. But still, with 10 men, when Strahinja Pavlovic got sent off, then I'm very impressed at the way Klagenfurt were able to turn that around, given who they were playing against.
Can we talk about the red card for a minute?
Absolutely.
Because I know that obviously by the rules of the game, this was a red card, but it kind of also pissed me off that it was a red card, simply because Karvainer was running at Strahinja Pavlovic and he was outside the box, and then he goes past him, and it's a decent scoring opportunity. I wouldn't say it's like an absolutely clear one, because he's slightly wider. And it also made me think, you know, don't we have this double jeopardy thing in football where, you know, if somebody denies a clear goal scoring opportunity, then the punishment of a free kick or in a dangerous position is really, I don't know. Was this a...
Well, therein lies the irony of that rule, because if Karvainer, who, as you said, was running sort of down that left channel between the left wing and the central, the central channel, I suppose, he was off to the left of the penalty area, but he was outside the penalty area when he just touched it past Pavlovic. Pavlovic brought him to ground a little bit too late into the challenge. But if he'd been inside the area, it wouldn't have been a red card. If he'd been in the box, it would have been a penalty and not a red card for the double jeopardy ruling. but this time it was outside the box. Therefore, it's not a penalty, but it is a last man infringement, and it's a red card. So they get sort of one or the other in that case. And you'd have to argue in this case, it worked out advantageously for Peter Pacult's Klagenfurt, because it was still the first half. I think there was still 6 or 7 minutes to go in the first half. Pavlovic is off. They didn't score from the resultant free kick, but they were crucially, I think, able to get a goal back before half-time.
Yes, I thought this was a really nice delivery from Andy Irving. This is a player whose praises we have sung numerous times. And I think, yeah, you're right. The fact that they were up a man is obviously a huge advantage for such a long time. But when you're 2-0 down against Salzburg, you need to reduce that deficit as soon as possible. And so to do that right on the stroke of half-time with this lovely delivery, and then a really nice header from Wimmer as well.
Set-piece specialist, isn't he, Wimmer? Mm. Seems to pop up a lot and get goals from dead ball situations.
Yeah, especially as I thought that he perhaps wasn't so good in the first half. I think there was a moment where he cleared the ball into the path of Konate for the first goal. So he was making amends a little bit, perhaps.
Yeah, but there was a half-time team talk, of course, for both teams. Austria Klagenfurt holding the momentum, which isn't that easy to do against Salzburg. But this is perhaps one of those situations where it comes into play as well that Gerhard Struber, the Salzburg coach, was actually away missing with illness for this match. So he wasn't able to host or to lead that team talk. Maybe that did make a difference, because I'm, again, very impressed with Klagenfurt that they came out. It's like as if they weren't playing against Salzburg. It's as if they were playing against anybody else. You know, it's one thing to say, yeah, we aim for a win against anybody. Yes, when we're 11-10 against anybody, we'll go for the win. But really, as you say, from 2-2 against Salzburg, it's not just as simple as that. You don't just start out playing Salzburg. Except they really did. They got the goal back before half time. They totally dominated after the break. It was all Klagenfurt really after the break. I would have thought Salzburg would have backed themselves to probably extend the lead or to hold on, but they couldn't do it. And with 74 minutes gone, Florian Jaritz finished off a really nice turn and finish in the box, found the bottom corner in style. And there was only really going to be one winner. And I think it says quite a lot about Peter Pacult's mentality, about Klagenfurt's expectations this season as this kind of dark horse team, that they went away the more disappointed team with a point, I think, at 2-2 full time.
Yeah, Peter Pacult was visibly frustrated on the sidelines, wasn't he? I think that perhaps we can't call them a dark horse anymore, because they've had two seasons now in the top six and they're looking pretty dead set to finish there again. They are one of the Bundesliga's more established clubs, and to see them frustrated at having not beaten Salzburg, I liked that. There's a belief there, a certain steel, I think.
Yeah, I think it was important for them. I'm not going to lie. This a clump in the table now, in the midfield of the table, and they're very much in the upper echelons of that mid-table melee. But I think it was an important statement for them to play so well against Salzburg, to go so close to winning it. Vanitznik had a great shot in injury time where he just hammered it from a long way out, and Schlager had some difficulties to parry it away. And yeah, I think it's a big statement for them, because it hasn't been like plain sailing this season. It's been a good start to the season, but they've probably dropped a few points where they feel that they should have won. Recent games have been very, very close. And I think it's important for them that they took that point. Even if it wasn't the win, of course, it's still a point against Salzburg, which for most teams, you know, that go, you still look back on that. Even though they're disappointed, you'll still look back on that on the fixture list and say, yeah, they've done well to get a point there from 2-2, whatever the circumstances. And yeah, I think it just keeps them, it's that confirmation that they really are a good footballing team. They really do have ambitions this season. Like you say, maybe we can call them dark horses, but in and of themselves, they've got that belief that they want to be in the top six, and they probably want to push on as well and not just be sixth out of the top six this year. So a really impressive game for Austria Klagenfurt, I thought. For Salzburg, though, the continuation of, I don't want to say a slump, but that would be over-dramatising things a little bit. But since they drew 2-2 with Sturm in Graz, it's been, what, a loss to Blau-Weiss Linz. They now lost in Europe in midweek, and we can talk about that too, because Real Sociedad was lined up as a pretty important game in terms of their qualification hopes. Obviously, they got the bonus result by beating Benfica. That was incredible. But then, as good as they were against Benfica, they were flat in Salzburg against Sociedad.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that the matchday one game would have been earmarked as the toughest on paper, because that was away to the pot one team, Benfica. This one on matchday two would have probably been earmarked as the easiest on paper because it was at home to the lowest ranked team. I think they're the lowest ranked team, aren't they? Because Benfica would have been first, Inter second, Salzburg third, Real Sociedad fourth. And the way that they defended, and in particular ran off or held off from challenging for the two goals, I think was quite disappointing.
Yeah, it was, as you say, just not enough pressure, and it looked suspiciously easy, didn't it? You know, I want to give credit to Sociedad because they scored two nice goals, two good finishes, but both of them on the replay, you just think, how did that pass get through there? Or how did that player run so simply almost? You know, one of them was a nice little bit of combination play deep inside their own half for Sociedad, and it took three Salzburg players out of the game, and then they just ran the length of the field and slotted it in without actually having to use any of the passing options available because everyone was just backing off and everyone else was trying to catch up. And it reminded me a little bit of almost, do you remember the breakaway goal that Salzburg scored against Benfica where all of them were just like piling forward in a row into the Benfica half and they could have passed it anywhere and scored. It was almost like an alternate version of that somehow with just two players. But Salzburg just never made a tackle. They just didn't do anything. And they were able to just bury it in the bottom corner both times and simply keep it away from Alexander Schlager, who didn't really have a chance to do anything about it. And I think if you play that kind of standoff, you know, if you don't close down quick enough, if you don't close down at all in the Champions League, you'll get punished, and they were.
Yeah, it's not really Salzburg's style or the Red Bull way at all, is it, to hold off? The whole principle of defending is aggressive pressing. And so I found it a little bit odd that I think it was Solé in both cases who was the particularly guilty party holding off. And disappointing. And then from there on, you know, when you're 2-0 down, as Austria Klagenfurt were against Salzburg, you need to get one back quite quickly. There were a couple of penalty claims. I think the Roko Simic one, when I watched it live, looked like more of a penalty than it actually did upon many camera angles post-game. But that was obviously something that the Salzburg players are a bit angry about. And then there was also a handball, which I thought could have been, probably not, but could have been given.
Yeah, does that make a difference that it was blasted at the player by his own teammate? Because it was like a Sociedad clearance towards their own penalty area, strangely. And it hit the player on the arm, and the arm was definitely outstretched from the body. I don't know. I thought that could be given. I don't know the exact rules. Who knows the exact handball rules? We'll talk about that later. But and the other one as well, the Simic one, as you say, at full speed, it looks like a definite penalty. And I still think on the replay, you're right, it's not quite as clear. But I think 9 times out of 10, you get a penalty for that.
Yeah.
It's just a bit messy, isn't it? It's a messy challenge. Mm. Simic is going down and then the keeper comes and finishes the job and sort of nobody really gets the ball cleanly. So although, yeah, maybe they can say Simic was already falling as the goalkeeper came, and then the tackle before wasn't a foul or whatever. It was all very clumsy from Sociedad. So they did get a little bit lucky there. But the truth is, Salzburg didn't deserve the luck to have a route back into the game. You know, they might have been able to take one. But even if they did get one back, I'm not convinced that they would have had a really great case to say we could have come back and drawn that game 2-2. They made their own bed in that first half. And it doesn't get massively easier for them now after a draw against Klagenfurt, because they've got LASK up next. They've got Inter after that away. They've got Altach, who are playing very well at home, and then Hartberg away, and Hartberg are high-flying as well, as we'll talk about them in the second half. But it's not exactly, it's not perfect that they've got Inter coming up right now away at San Siro, is it?
No, and it'll be a double header with Inter as well, won't it, on matchday 3 and matchday 4, which means that they really need to, with the table as it is at the moment, so you've got Sociedad top on 4, Inter next on 4 as well, Salzburg on 3, Benfica on none. Now, if Inter pull away in both of those games, then they'll be quite reliant on the results of that doubleheader between Sociedad and Benfica, if they're to have any chance of going through.
Yeah, they've left themselves in a bit of a precarious position. I suppose, to be fair to Salzburg, we would have taken it if they lost to Benfica in Portugal and then beat Sociedad in Salzburg. Then we would have still said they'd be in the same position going into this Inter doubleheader with 3 points. And you'd say, okay, fair enough. But then Sociedad wouldn't have 4 points and be leading the group either. Mm. So, yeah, they've left themselves in a difficult spot. And perhaps the worst news of the weekend for Salzburg and for Gerhard Struber, who will not like this one bit, is that after the slip-up against Klagenfurt, Sturm were afforded the opportunity to take over the lead of the Bundesliga. And actually, in reality, in chronological reality, the Sturm game was earlier. But they themselves came from behind, trailing 1-0 against VRC at the break, but they came back to beat Wolfsburg by 2-1, and therefore they've ended this weekend top of the table. They are top after 10 games as we speak right now. That's quite something, isn't it?
It is. I can't say I expected this, given the flying start that Salzburg made to the season under Struber. And of course, you never know how long it's going to last for. Sturm have been remarkably consistent. And the question about anyone that challenges Salzburg is, do they have the consistency required? And then, of course, we have the points being halved. So even if Sturm pick up a big lead now, that's going to be cut in half on match day 22. So it's good. They just need to keep going game by game and hope that they can make this potential title race go on for as long as possible.
Yeah, I think you're right to mention the point split and things, but I think for me it's not just about Sturm being top. I know that is quite a sign, you know, it is quite a statement to be top right now, because Salzburg are so for so many weeks, you know, they're always top of the table really. But it's just the case that, okay, even however the points are halved, whatever, Sturm are really right there with Salzburg this season, it seems. And both of them have come through a difficult couple of weeks. And to see Sturm at the top of the table, it does just send out a bit of a message to Salzburg that, hey, this is really on this season. And it always seems to be Sturm who are chasing. And there was that sort of typical moment a couple of weeks ago. Two things. I mentioned it last week, so I won't labour it too much. But Sturm played really well for a little bit against Salzburg. They led, but they didn't win. Little marker, they didn't win. And then Salzburg lost to Blau-Weiss Linz. Massive shock. Sturm had the chance to go top, and they didn't go top. You know, it's those things, it so often happens that you can't do it. And this time, it was almost the same again, because VRC went 1-0 up. Sturm were outraged, really, with the decision. And let's talk about that now, because I said there were more VAR variable decisions. And this was perhaps the biggest one of the whole weekend. Mohamed Bamba for VRC, just before the break, down in the left-hand corner, in a challenge, slips over, but then controls the ball with his hand as he's going to ground, and it stops the ball from rolling away from him. And then 2 or 3 seconds later, he's put a quick low cross into the box, and it's turned in as an own goal from Amadou Dante. VRC 1, Sturm 0, half-time score. I cannot really fathom how that isn't given as a handball. I don't understand. The only thing I can sort of mitigate for it is that, yeah, Bamba slips over. He doesn't mean to handball it. But the use of his arm, clearly, it's like he falls over and knocks the ball back into the path of his own foot. And I can't see how anybody can look at that as a referee and say, I mean, I don't know the in-depth rulings, which of course the referees do, but it seems like everyone's thinking about these things from a different perspective when they look at things. But I can't see how that, in the direct lead-up to a goal, isn't ruled out.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite clear to me that it was a handball. A lovely run thereafter to storm into the box and play that right across the face of goal. I think you could tell how controversial it was because, you know, we talked in the earlier part of this pod about Peter Packholt being annoyed that they hadn't gone on to beat Salzburg and get a win. Christian Ilse's side did actually win, and Ilse was still livid at the final whistle and still having to be sort of semi-held back from talking to the officials. So he was clearly very angry by this. But as it happens, a couple of just sublime goals from Sturm Graz to work their way back into this game.
Yeah, we don't want to be too hyperbolic, but I thought they were both great. And we'll talk about the two goals right now then. Before we get into the detail of the goals, which one was your favourite? First or second?
Well, I think most people would say the first because it was a free kick into the top corner from a long way out. But actually, in terms of the technique, the second.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I think the second is my favourite too. Start with Sakarya's equaliser though. Two players standing over the ball. Sturm have become sort of specialists for scoring long-range goals, haven't they? They've got a few players who are very much capable, not just from dead balls, but even from open play. They're good value for scoring from outside the box. Like Gazi Begovic, he's got an absolute hammer of a boot on him. Sakarya's not afraid to score from outside the box. I think like Pras does it sometimes as well. Kita Ishvili definitely scored that amazing goal against Salzburg, definitely be in the race for goal of the season. Smashed it off the bar. And now, yeah, this free kick, they're both standing over the ball. Sakarya takes it almost from the kind of wrong angle, if you will. You'd have thought the position is just sort of to the left of the D and then back a little bit, back 5 or 6 yards. And you sort of want somebody to curl that in over the wall and then near post, don't you? But instead, he does the other one and smashes it away into the far corner. It's a lovely hit.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely beautiful. I wonder if you're, as you say, was he sort of on the wrong side to do that as a left footer? Doesn't that make it more unpredictable which part of the goal you're going to hit if you're a left footer in that position? Because the right footed player is expected to sort of curl it over and inside to the near post.
You can only do it really, can't you? Yeah. The goalie will get across if you do it right footed to the other corner.
Yeah, I'm not trying to downplay Manpreet Sakari's incredible free kick by any means, but yeah, that was absolutely sensational. But as I say, like, if I may move on to the second of those goals, the ball comes across, and what I liked about this is Kitishvili meets it with his right foot and just smashes it first time low into the bottom corner. But this is a super difficult goal to execute because of the way that he let the ball come across his body first, which means the timing has to be absolutely perfect to hit that there.
And yeah, it was like a 90-degree volley, wasn't it? The cross is coming across from Dante, who actually scored the own goal, so great redemption from Dante on the left. And it's a big volley. He sort of takes a good... It's like a Pro Evolution Soccer animation, you know? It's like you've pressed square already, and he's lining it up. The foot comes all the way back and then swipes through, and he's sort of facing the corner flag from whence the cross came, really, isn't he? And then manages to get it off the boot, off the outside of the laces, in at 90 degrees to the goal, into the near post bottom corner. I think that's, technically, that's one of the best goals you'll see. If you can find that, go and watch it. I know there's, obviously there's a lot of Bundesliga highlights out there, but maybe if your territory is, if your territory's blocked and you don't have a, a VPN or something, there's probably some Georgian football accounts who are loving that, because it was a brilliant goal.
Yeah, I think the correct English verb is he thwacked it.
It's a thriker, as Alan Partridge would say. He would have said, did you see that? He must have a foot like a traction engine. But it's Otake Teixeira. He does have a foot like a traction engine. And and Sturm went on to win it. As you say, they weren't overall happy with the refereeing performance despite the win. I think there's a point in there for Christian Ilzer. It goes down a bit easier when you win, doesn't it? That you can actually still have a valid criticism without everyone just saying you're a sore loser or go cry more on Twitter or whatever people are going to write. But, you know, they don't need to cry. They're top of the Bundesliga. They came from behind to beat a spirited Vietti, who we must say have done a better job in recent weeks, Vietti, and they really played a part in this game.
I would add also that Manfred Schmidt was suspended for this game and was represented on the sidelines by his assistant. And that's two games we've talked about so far with teams who were in front and then didn't pick up the 3 points with coaches that weren't on the sidelines. And it does make you wonder, you know, if the in-game management, is that a factor? Would that have happened if Manfred Schmidt and Gerhard Struber had been on the sidelines?
Yeah. Very good question. I wonder if Sturm were sort of like more motivated by their perceived injustice of the handball for the first goal. Those things can easily get on top of you as well. It's not easy to channel that injustice into going back and winning the game. It's easier to get frustrated and get yellow cards and stuff, but they didn't do that. They also provided the only European win of the week when they beat Rakov Częstochowa in the Europa League.
Please tell me how many times you practiced that before you said it out loud.
I haven't practiced it, but I'm trying to channel I'm trying to channel Christopher Lasch, who spoke to us about Polish football on our Sturm Graz podcast. There are podcasts for Salzburg, Sturm and Lask about their European exploits. So do look for those in our podcast feed. But yeah, I think it's Częstochowa. They weren't playing there, though, because it was a glorious looking stadium, not the sort of slightly famously run down one where Rakov play their league football. But Sturm went there and they did the job, which for an Austrian team, any away win in a European competition is a decent job, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. A great result. And looking at the group, the games against Rakov are probably going to be pivotal for them because, you know, as long as they can finish in third place and then potentially get into the, you know, the Conference League, then that will, you know, keep them in Europe. They will überwintern, as the Austrians love to say.
Yes.
So stay in Europe over the winter. And yeah, I mean, it's been a good week for them, really, hasn't it, results-wise?
Yeah, definitely. It was only 1-0 against Rakov. William Berving scored the goal. They did have opportunities for other goals. Rakov pushed and tried, but I think Sturm were quite well deserving of the 1-0 win. They hit the bar, they tested the goalkeeper a couple of times. The only regret will be that they didn't kill off the game earlier, and that can cost you in Europe it probably would have cost them against Atalanta or Sporting. It didn't this time against Rakov, thankfully. Berving is being touted as Mr. Europa Cup, as they call it here. What your thoughts on two things? What are your thoughts on the Austrian reliance on calling every European competition the Europa Cup? Because that annoys me slightly. But also that, and can William Berving truly be Mr. Europa Cup already?
So the first one, that's their way of saying in European competition, isn't it?
But for that, they say international, which annoys me even more. Because international football, we all know, is something completely different.
Yeah.
But for Austrians, international football is European football.
Yeah.
And international football is Länderspiele, which is okay, that's fine. Country games, that's fine. But
I completely agree. To answer the second one...
Sorry, I'm going off a tangential rant.
That's all right, Tom. linguists have issues, and sometimes they need to be vented. The second one, though, Berving Mr. Europa Cup. Well, he's scored 2 goals in 2 games this season, which is a good return. He also scored that double against Lazio, and he scored 1 goal against PSV in qualifying. I think it might be a little early for that nickname. I think he might need to do a little bit more to earn that, but maybe it's a reference to the significant goal output in Europe versus the Bundesliga, because without knowing that nickname, I just commented earlier before we started recording, hey, isn't Berving pretty good in European games? And I think maybe they've just noticed that he's more prolific when he's playing Internazionale.
He is, but that means the nickname is almost a slight at like how few Bundesliga goals he scores, which turns it down because, he's only got 5. I mean, hey, 5 is good. 5 is very decent for a new signing last season. 5 in European competition, that's not bad at all, but I agree. I think he's warming up to the title, Mr. Europa Cup. If he scores again, I think he's only a couple of goals away, but if he scores a couple more in the group stages and sends Sturm through to Überwintern, as you say, these group stages, and at least be in the Conference League in winter, the other side of Christmas. If Berving gets involved with that, then I'll call him. In 2024, I'll call him Mr. Europa Cup. But until then, he's Mr. Europa. I don't know. He's not quite the finished article yet. But still, good week for Sturm, as you said.
He's a great Dane. That's what he is.
A great Dane. Okay, yeah. Very, very good. Yeah, very good. LASK, the other team in Europe, 2 tight games this week for them. Mm-hmm. They lost 1-0 in a very narrow defeat in Toulouse. Mm. Lots of jokes there for linguists with Toulouse and, they were destined to lose, whatever. I'm not going to go into that because
I made one when we watched the highlights before this podcast and 0 reaction from you. So I wondered...
I'm not sure if I even noticed it.
Yeah, I thought it might just be another one from Lee. So I thought you might just let it go.
No, it wasn't that. It just slipped under the radar. Nah. I'm not going to lie.
Like, oh, well.
It's too easy with Toulouse, isn't it? Mm. But anyway, they lost in Toulouse, but they beat Altach. Altach put on a very good display, actually, and Altach will feel pretty rough not to have come away with at least a point from the Raiffeisen Arena. But I think also it's kind of a crucial result for LASK, because I mentioned this sort of midfield schmutzel. There's so many teams who are really close together now in the Austrian Bundesliga. But LASK needed that win to just stay a little bit elevated from that, because their traditional position in the last year or so has been in this league of their own, third place, not mixing in with everybody else, no risk of sort of falling down into the battle for the top 6 or anything like that. And had they not won this one, they would have been dragged back into that for now at least. And it was only 1-0. It was an 82nd minute goal from Robert Jules. And it wasn't exactly against the run of play, but like I say, it was a bit harsh on Altach, I thought. Nonetheless, a coolly taken winning goal.
Yeah, I think so. I would just like to comment on LASK's attacking output, because with 13 goals scored this season, that is the lowest of any club in the top 7, and actually their opponents, Altach, who have 9, are the highest team in the table who they've scored more goals against.
I know what you mean, but I don't
know
how
to say it. They've scored more goals than that team, yeah. So I think that's the problem. And I did comment to you as well pre-pod about Marin Ljubicic, because he signed last summer, didn't he? And then they tried to get him on a permanent transfer pretty quickly because he was starting life absolutely crazily, loads of goals. And since then, he doesn't really seem to be the same player. Was he playing for the contract? I don't know, but he's definitely not as prolific. And there were chances in that game. You know, that one that was played across the face of goal and he meets it at the back post and just, you know, side foots it over the bar. I think Marin Ljubicic, when he first signed for LASK, would have scored that.
That was in the Toulouse game. Mm. And yeah, I agree with you. You've got to be putting those in. You just have to score those. There's a few players at LASK who I think could use a goal for sure. This decision to leave out Peter Michel in Europe and basically not feature him much in the Bundesliga is coming under increased scrutiny. He did come on in the game against Altach as they went on to win late on. But Robert Julli has been the hero, really. He's been the man that they're relying on, as with Tobias Laval, their young goalkeeper, who's been excellent. They've got some very good players in that squad. They've got a very large squad. I think Moses Usor could really use a goal. I think Marin Ljubicic could use some goals for sure. It's not the easiest time for them, and they're actually doing okay considering. And like I said, I think this win, this 1-0 against Altach, was kind of an underrated but much, much needed win for them. And Altach did a really good job in the game. I feel for them a bit. They hit the post a couple of times, forced some really good saves, hit the bar. Yeah, Altach were unlucky, but from the last perspective, they had to win that game, and they did do it. They lost, though, midweek against Toulouse. I felt a little bit like the comments afterwards were quite results-based, and we do talk about this sometimes. So they lost 1-0 in Toulouse, and everyone was just basically saying they didn't do enough. They didn't create enough. They didn't do enough to get a point. I think they did do enough to get a point. They matched Toulouse for me. They were, you know, they're away from home in like a big purple cauldron. It was an amazing atmosphere. Toulouse loving being back in the big time. Squad value, way more valuable than LASK. I know there's a lot of factors in there, but they're the underdogs against Toulouse. And they came in and honestly, they stopped Toulouse from creating much as well. I think the final tally was like 13 shots to 12, which makes it sound like a big like festival of shots, but it was like 2-on-1 to the ones on target. And Toulouse happened to score from one, which opened up for them so fortunately. There's a ball into the box, and then I think it's Andrade who came across and made a tackle down on the corner of the 6-yard box. And then the ball just sort of sprang back off the striker's leg as he tries to ride the challenge and just fell to, of all the players in the box, it fell to like the only forwardly mobile Toulouse player who had an easy finish. Suazo could just sweep it in from about 5 yards out with the goal at his mercy. And like, yeah, Laval was still there, but he wasn't going to save it from that point. And other than that, nothing, just Toulouse didn't really create much. I don't think Laval had a good save from a header, but to then just say simply, LASK didn't create enough, they didn't do enough, I don't really agree with it, because I think on another day, LASK didn't create much, that's fair enough. They're away in the Europa League, they created 2 or 3 chances of which they should have scored at least one. At least one of those should go in. And on another day, they could definitely have drawn that game 1-1, won the game 1-0, if that one chance hadn't fallen to Toulouse. It was like their only sniff in the first half. Like, I think it was a very even game, and I think it's a bit unlucky that LASK lost it.
I think it's going to be tough for them now, isn't it, in this group, having lost that opening game against Liverpool, which we would have expected. But obviously it did come down to these games against Toulouse and Union Saint-Gilloise. And as you say, the difference in class on the pitch was not so huge that a win for Toulouse was inevitable. You wonder now where those points are going to come from.
You do. I think the positives that I can take from that are they really matched. I do think they really matched Toulouse. So when they play Toulouse at home, they haven't got too much to fear. Toulouse are a very decent side, but LASK were right with them. I think Union Saint-Gilloise might be a little sort of click above Toulouse. I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But you're right, I don't think it's going to get any easier, put it that way, against Union Saint-Gilloise. So I do think LASK are in a difficult place right now in the Europa League. But hey, it's the Europa League. They're sort of bound to be. Nevertheless, a disappointing loss for them, somewhat mitigated by that win in the Bundesliga that leaves them in third place. And those were the three teams involved in European action, Salzburg, Sturm and LASK. And just like on match day one in Europe, there was only one winner for Austria and two losers. So at least Austria picking up a few points in that very congested race for the top sort of 11, 12, 13 spots in Europe. It wasn't a completely barren week, at least. And on that positive note, we'll leave it there for the first part of this Other Bundesliga podcast. And we'll be back to round up the rest of the Bundesliga action after a short break. Well, Welcome back to part two of this episode of the Other Bundesliga podcast. Lee, I hope you're enjoying your pint of Stiegel. I am. Cheers.
Cheers, yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was waiting for you to finish. I was about to drink my beer.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to come in with something Stiegel-related there. The reason I mentioned the Stiegel and shoehorned it so smoothly into this podcast is because of our new partnership with Austrian Store UK, which I'm sure many of you know about by now. But if you don't, it's a place where you can buy Stiegel wherever you live. You don't have to live in Austria to get some of the finest Austrian goods, like a very refreshing Stiegel beer, something that I remember from sort of Stiegel's, like when you go to the park and you're sitting in the sunshine in the park, which I miss now because we can't do it anymore. But you sit in the sunshine in the park, you crack open a Stiegel. It's a good one. And if you walk into a pub and they've got Stiegel on tap as well, all of us, we all know, not just the other Bundesliga guys, but our mates as well, we're all like, ah, yeah. This, you come to a good pub if they've got Stiegel on tap, right?
Yeah, it's always the good choice. I had a particularly good day once at the Stiegel Brauerei in Salzburg.
Oh, yeah.
So if you ever go to see a Red Bull Salzburg game or, you know, an Austria Salzburg game or whoever it may be, a trip to the Stiegel Brauerei is definitely worthwhile.
That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because it's not very far away from Munich, Salzburg, but the Stiegel Brauerei, as you say, it's like a proper beer hall, isn't it? It's like a Munich beer hall in Salzburg. That's really nice, actually. And you've got all these the giant like Krug glasses, like the big 1 liter glasses you can get on the, well, they're sort of made of some kind of ceramic thing, and you take one of those off the wall, and then you go over to a person with a big barrel of beer, and they fill it up for you. That's quite a fun experience. And then you just sit in a big hall anyway. You don't just have your own table. You sort of, it's not like Oktoberfest, but it's sort of like that all year round. It's a good experience. Involving Stiegel, and yes, to take us back to the point, at austrianfood.co.uk, the Austrian store, you can get Stiegel as well as many other Austrian things. They've also got a really nice kind of Christmas gift package, which involves like chocolates, condiments, all the really cool, nice Austrian things, biscuits, that kind of stuff. And you can get all of that stuff at austrianfood.co.uk, and you can get it as well with an exclusive 15% discount if you use the code Other Bundesliga. That's together as one word with a capital O and a capital B. Other Bundesliga is the code. 15% off at austrianfood.co.uk. To the games on Saturday, we already covered the Sunday games. Coincidentally, in a way, all of those were featured in part one of this podcast. But on Saturday, it was a totally one-sided affair. There was a 3-0, a 4-0, and a 5-0. And Lee, I'll throw it over to you. Choose whichever one of those you want. The 3-0, the 4-0, or the 5. What are you picking first?
Oh, I mean, we could literally talk about any of those. I suppose...
All of them, Lee. We will talk about all of them.
Yeah, but we could talk about any first.
Give our listeners what they want.
Hartberg, I think.
I'll start with a 3. Okay, I see what you're doing.
Actually, what my thinking was here is that I feel like these are more anomalous results for the Vienna clubs, whereas Hartberg is an actual trend that might be worth giving them some airtime for.
Yeah, I'll take that.
They've had just a great start to the season. There's no other way to put it. And the fact that they're now fourth with 16 points and a formation, 4 wins, 4 draws and 2 losses. Just brilliant stuff.
Very nice. Does anyone else in the Bundesliga have a formation-based win-loss-draw record after 10 games?
Rapid Vienna, a 3-5-2.
Okay.
Wolfsburger ATC and Autark. No, Wolfsburger ATC, 3-4-3. Autark, it could be a 3-3-4. That was a formation back in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah, very old school.
The 1880s formation of choice would be VSK Tirol's 1-2-7.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a few in there.
Nobody's got a Scotland 5-5-0.
No, there are no 5-5-0s, no.
Ah, schade. But yeah, so Hartberg have a formation-based win-draw-loss column. But as you say, theirs is the result that fits the trend. You would have gone into that on normal seasons. You'd have said anybody could win that. This season right now, Hartberg against VSG in Hartberg, there was only really going to be one winner, wasn't there?
Yeah. And I think also what makes it quite impressive is that they were without the top scorer, Maximilian Entrup, who currently has a back injury, and they still managed to score 3 goals. I think 2 of them particularly nice ones. One of them sort of tap home for the third. But yeah, I mean, obviously...
From Mr. Falafel.
Yeah, Mr. What's his name? Falafel something?
Maximilian Falafel, 18-year-old, first Bundesliga goal. There you go. Mr. Falafel, as he's now called. If Berving is Mr. Europa Cup, Falafel is Mr. Falafel.
That might
and I say that as a lover of falafel, so it's no slight.
Are you finished with the falafel chat? That might explain his reaction to run over and celebrate so nicely with Marcus Schopp.
Did you order a dinner? Sorry, all right.
Get out. Literally, you've totally derailed my thoughts there. But yeah, just, I don't know, they're really punching above their weight. We knew that bringing Marcus Schopp back was probably a good move, but I don't think anyone really expected this to be above both Vienna clubs and so close behind LASK. This sort of, it's not an early stage of the season anymore, is it? 10 games. We're almost halfway through the regular season. So it's, yeah, a huge achievement.
It really is. They were third on Saturday night. Obviously, there were more games to come and they dropped down to fourth. But to see them up in third was, it's just incredible. And to be honest, fourth is no less incredible, really. And as you say, I think the reason for picking this game was a very good one, because you're right, it was just a fully deserved result. Like, this is totally in keeping with the way they've been this season. I remember seeing them throw away 2 points against Blau-Weiss Linz with two late goals to throw away a two-goal lead. And I think they threw away two-goal leads in both of their first couple of games or something. And those were against Lustenau and Blau-Weiss. And wow, with four more points, they could so easily have four more points and they'd be absolutely flying. But nonetheless, they're still flying. The free beer has obviously worked since Brigitte Anne, the president, gave away the free beers. They've continued their excellent trend and they just completely outplayed VSG Tirol. It's worrying times for the bottom two, but VSG didn't have a sniff really of a chance in that game. And Hartberg just steamrolled them. Ruben Providence got his first of the season, I think. Filafa with his first in the Bundesliga as well, as I said. And who scored the first one again?
Lang.
Oh yeah, Lang, the loanee, Christoph Lang, who's been absolutely excellent. Not just this season, but for the last sort of year. I think he's floating under the radar and doing a very, very good job, Christoph Lang. There was a touch of fortune about the goal. It was another one for the VAR controversy book because it hit the hand of Dominic Frieser in attack before Lang poked it home. But it was no less than Hartberg deserved. So they got the 3-0.
The goal had Lang been coming.
Yes, very good. I have to accept that after all my Filafa nonsense. I can't criticise that in any way. Austria-Vienna, perhaps most shockingly of the three, were the team to get the 4-0 win as they beat Blau-Weiss Linz at home.
Yeah, what a contrast between the Blau-Weiss Linz team that won in Salzburg compared to this. I thought that, you know, they were not very compact, to be honest, not very solid defensively, easy to say when you concede four goals. And obviously, Austria-Vienna went into this game in a bit of a crisis position in the nether regions of the table. And there were even banners of support for Michael Wimmer before the game. So this was when they really needed to win. And I just did not expect them to do so quite so easily. Andreas Gruber is now the Austrian Bundesliga's top scorer with 7 goals after his hat-trick in this game. And in particular, the finish for the first goal. Absolutely lovely.
Yeah, he just leathered it first time into the top corner, didn't he? Across the box, into the far top corner. Lovely first time hit. Gruber's been a real hero for them this season in place of Tabakovic, who's obviously gone to Hertha Berlin. I mean, he's not the same kind of player, but he's sort of fitted in the space that's been left by Tabakovic and sort of taken over as a big team leader, really. And he's always been a player who I've really liked, Gruber, from his time at LASK. Mm-hmm. Austria-Vienna now as well. And yeah, fitting to have him as the top scorer. But still, that's quite interesting. If you just look at it statistically, they went into this game having scored, I think, 6 goals in 9 matches before this one.
Hmm.
You would never think that a player from that team, where were they? Third bottom in the table, second bottom in the table, with 6 goals scored from 9 games, and yet they've got the top goal scorer in the Bundesliga now. That doesn't seem to make sense at all, does it? That's a measure of just how much they've been the Andreas Gruber show this season.
Yes, yeah, 70% of their goals he's scored, which is quite insane, considering he's not like an out-and-out striker as well.
Yeah, absolutely incredible stuff.
And one for Fiznik Aslani, who scored his first goal in the Austrian Bundesliga. He's a player that I am tracking quite closely because of my association with Hoffenheim. So, good to see him get off the mark as well. It was sort of a poacher's goal, parried out by the goalkeeper.
But from a shot by Gruber.
Yeah, but in the right place at the right time.
Yes, absolutely. I think we raised a few eyebrows when Aslani came from Hoffenheim, didn't we? I thought he might be sort of in with a shout of getting into the, you know, the fringes of the Hoffenheim squad maybe this season. But they've loaned him out and, you know, Austria-Vienna need him because they're really, really struggling. Even after this win, you can't, you know, you can't overstate how important it was. Just their second win of the whole season, 2 wins in 10 games. I think it's quite significant that the fans were supporting Michael Wimmer and saying that he's one of us, because this is the polar opposite of what we've seen the Austria Vienna fan base react like in recent seasons.
Oh my God, I just looked at back to the results. This was their first league win since Sunday the 6th of August, so exactly 2 months.
Wow.
That is, and that was against rock bottom winless Austria Lustenau. And it was their first home win since even longer. Their first home win in the league since, yeah, some point last season. So.
Yeah, wow, shocking. Mm. I knew they hadn't won at all since they beat Legia Warsaw in the qualifiers in the first leg, because Rapid had that as well. They beat Fiorentina and they didn't win for ages. Mm. And lost, obviously, the second leg against Fiorentina. And Austria lost the second leg against Legia and didn't win for ages either. So really tough times for them. Still, a 4-0 win, that's going to do them a lot of good. The points are absolutely vital as they look to move up the table. And Rapid got the 5-0 win. Still almost as unexpected as the others, as Austria Vienna's result, but maybe slightly less so, because they've been threatening to score a few goals for a while and they just haven't quite managed it. They've had the chances, they've had the performances that have occasionally been there, but getting the goals has proven very difficult. Just the tonic you need is a trip to winless Lustenau,
who were terrible, defended terribly. I don't particularly enjoy picking out individual players for criticism, but I'm going to have to do it once I've looked up the lad's first name. Can we please cut that out? Ironically, you can leave it in because his name on FotMob is just Anderson. So we can leave that in. I don't look like I don't know what I'm talking about. But I thought he, you know, he had
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Anderson. He had a role in the first 3 goals, and he did not look flattering in any instance of those. From the Rapid perspective, how funny that a team that has been so inconsistent and performed below expectations won their third game of the season by a 5-0 scoreline. Because there was Debrecen and there was Blauwes Linz as well in that week.
Was that 4-0? I can't remember.
I think it was 5.
Well? Maybe it was 5 as well. They got another one at the end, didn't they? It was Maiulu, and I think Maiulu scored against his old club to make it 5.
Yeah, it was 5-0 with Maiulu scoring 90+2. Good knowledge,
yeah,
Tom.
There you go.
So yeah, just they confuse me so much. I just don't know what to say about Rapid Vienna anymore, because every time you draw some kind of conclusion, it's just a snapshot. So they play well, you analyze it. They play well, they play badly, you analyze it. But you just don't know what you're going to get. And for a team with that fan base and that quality of players, it just, yeah, I am befuddled, if I can use that word.
No, you've got a good point, because it's difficult on a weekly podcast to talk about Rapid, because you can't just say like, oh, they got a big win, all is good. Mm. It's not. All is not good. They've moved back up into the top 6. Yeah, great. The absolute bare minimum expectation. They've beaten the bottom club in the Bundesliga to move up into the top 6. Like, this is not good. It's not what they should be doing. They need to be at least where Lask are in that kind of, you know, third place, and perhaps looking up the table and occasionally looking like a team who can push on up and challenge for European places. But it's not the case. What did you say? Their third win of the season?
By a 5-0 scoreline.
Yeah, but
in all comps.
And how many games have they won in the Bundesliga? 3, right?
Yeah, I think
I know the other 5-0s have not all been in the Bundesliga, but I think they've only won 3 times this season.
Yeah, they have, yeah.
And that is
because they are the 3-5-2.
Exactly, they're the 3-5-2, and that's a disgrace, really. 3 out of 10 games. You cannot be winning 3 out of 10 games when you're Rapid Vienna. I said about this midfield battle, this melee in the middle of the table. But honestly, how many of those clubs have got points tallies right now after 10 games that would basically be relegation points tallies in a lot of leagues? You know, how many points do you want when you've got 10 games? You need to be on 15 plus minimum to be doing all right, don't you? And who's got that? Only Austria Klagenfurt and above. Mm. Nobody else has got 15 points from 10 games. Rapid have got 14. Everyone else has got fewer than that. And that's all right if you're Altach. I think Altach have played a lot better this season to get 3 wins and 12 points from their 10 games than expected, perhaps. But when you're Rapid, it doesn't fly. When you're Austria Vienna, it doesn't fly.
From a goals perspective, if you look at the table, take away the games against Blauwes Linz and Austria Lustenau, Rapid's total goals have halved from 20 to 10. And obviously that is excluding two games, but when you get to 10 goals scored at this stage of the season, that is like proper relegation form.
Yeah.
So the goals are clearly, I think, the problem for them. Because the defence of 9, that's only 2 goals more conceded than Salzburg. But the attack, consistently getting goals, they need to get somewhere where they're not either beating teams 5-0 or drawing. Just lads, some 1 or 2-0 wins, please.
Yeah, it's sort of ironic. You can paint the statistics quite positively if you wanted to for Rapid. They've only lost twice. They've scored 20. That's the second most in the Bundesliga. They've only conceded 9. That's not a bad record at all. Only the top 3 have conceded fewer than that. But as you say, almost all of those are coming in occasional big wins against teams who have weak teams down the bottom of the table who have a big off day. And that's not the consistency you need. You know, that's sort of the polar opposite of what LASK are doing, really. And I know they're not that far ahead, but maybe the polar opposite of what Salzburg are actually doing and Sturm are doing. Sturm are unbeaten after 10 games, you know. And they're coming through crucial games with crucial narrow wins because they're able to get the wins over the line. It's not about just occasionally turning up with a 5-0 and then not winning again for another month. And that's what Rapid do. And this is the problem. We've talked about their fan base before, who've been a bit like, you know, sort of, the highs, the peaks and the troughs of their fan base, you think also everything is the best or they have to be the best and then everything is the worst and everything is terrible. They do seem to be sort of changing slowly in that mentality and actually sort of expecting more consistency from the team. But yeah, it's interesting. And we can't hammer them after a 5-0 win either. You know, it was a very weak list on our side, as you mentioned. But Marco Gruhl, who's been a good player, scored a brace. But that's his first Bundesliga goals of the season. You know, it's not... All is not right, despite the 5-0 win. We can definitely say that. But, you know, at least they got it. They needed that. I think what we can say from Saturday's games as well is the losing sides, so Lustenau, who lost 5-0, Blau-Weiß-Linz, who lost 4-0, and VSK, who lost 3-0, I would make a case for saying that they, although they weren't the bottom three until after these results, there's a good chance that they will be the bottom three. And I know Blau-Weiß-Linz fans will probably be annoyed at that because they've got 9 points right now. They're doing okay. They've got a couple of wins. They beat Salzburg. I mean, that's incredible. But I would argue that these three are sort of expected now to be the bottom three.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think as well, when you have a league with 12 teams where only one actually goes down, you can kind of get away with underperforming as a big team because you have to be spectacularly bad to finish in that bottom spot. Whereas if you look at other leagues like the Premier League, there's 8 more teams but 2 more relegation berths. And if the league was like that in Austria, I think you could genuinely see one of these Vienna clubs, specifically Austria Vienna, going down at some point. But they are just spared by this format.
Yeah. I agree. There's no way Austria Vienna will go down this season, as bad as they have been. You know, they've got 2 wins from 10, but they're not going to go down because I think right now, even VSG Tirol are 3 points above the relegation zone. And VSG Tirol have been, by sort of every possible metric, appalling this season. I don't like to say that. I don't like to say that about anybody, but Austria Lustenau have been even worse, basically. You know, they're still on this Europe's winless run. As are my hometown Cheltenham, by the way, who scored their first goal of the season this weekend in a 1-1 draw against Derby. But, you know, they're still on a winless list at this point of the season. That's really tough. And then when you guessed it, who did VSG Tirol get their one win against? It was against Lustenau. You know, it's as you say, difficult to go down. And I wonder now, we've got the international break coming up. Austria have got a big game that we can mention very briefly before we finish. But are we going to see people sacked? Are we going to see changes from some of these teams at the bottom?
Have there been any yet this season?
Not yet.
That's surprising, isn't it, to get to October without any sacking? I don't know.
It doesn't. I don't know. It seems like it shouldn't be.
It's because Reed aren't in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, true. Yeah, they took charge. Reed and formerly some of the Vienna clubs took charge of like a lot of managerial changes.
Yeah.
I
think if Lustenau continue like this, they will have no choice but to sack Markus Mader.
Do you think so?
I think if you're just not winning games up until the halfway point of the regular season, I think that's enough time that you have to start thinking, if we don't change, we will go down.
Somebody else might be able to do more with the squad. And I think the other two teams, Blau-Weiß-Linz being the promoted side, there's sort of a bit more slack on the manager. And then VSG Tirol as well with Silberberger. You know, he's been there forever. He's basically immune to pressure because they know. I think maybe if Austria Lustenau weren't there, there might be some pressure on Thomas Silberberger right now, but I think they probably wouldn't even sack him if they went down, because I think they sort of know that he might be the best man for the job back in Vattens in the second division. So they're a bit of a special case when it comes to managerial pressure. But anyway, Before we round up quickly, we've got Friday night's game, Austria against Belgium on Friday the 13th. And there's already been quite some bad luck hitting the Austria squad. I think there's quite a few players who are out injured. I can't remember exactly who they are right now, but I saw Arnautovic has gone out injured. And I've seen a few other people who are not available to play. But they could see
Alaba?
Yeah,
Sabitzer at Dortmund.
Sabitzer as well, yes.
Although he might be back.
Okay. No, Alaba was the one that I saw. But yeah, you're right. Of course, Sabitzer as well.
Posch and Gregoric.
All of them are out.
According to FOTMOB, they're out until late October 2023
but
or early November.
Gregoric is the safety net for Austria. So that doesn't bode well for the Belgium game. And I think Belgium are missing one or two players as well. And I thought, we've got a chance now. But then Austria have got even more players missing. However, there is still qualification for Euro 2024 at stake. Can they get it done? We'll be there to find out. I'm very much looking forward to seeing whether they can get it done and hopefully get over the line vorzeitig.
Yeah, I won't be there. You and Simon will be. They're definitely going to qualify. I think it's okay to say definitely. When you're 13, joint top on 13 points and Sweden have 6, I think it is definitely. This game will likely determine in what position that is. They did give Belgium a pretty good game in the away fixture. Obviously, these injuries, though, are probably going to play a role. So I would say Belgium, slight favourites.
Yeah, it's going to be a sellout, I think. It's also a free hit. It's like a feel-good free hit. If they beat Belgium, the Austria team will be riding a massive crest of a wave into the Euros, and that's going to be amazing. I would absolutely love to see that. If they draw with Belgium, still a fantastic result. 2 draws against Belgium in the group. You'll look back on the group and say, we really couldn't have done much better than that. If they lose, they've still got the backup option of, as long as one win is recorded, I think, against Azerbaijan or Estonia, they'll still qualify. So it's looking good. Free hit, full house. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And then after that is the game against... Sorry, did you just say this? After that is the game against Azerbaijan. The Baku up.
Nice, the Baku up. Okay. Well, on that note, we'll leave you there for this episode of the Other Bundesliga
Too
podcast.
Too many puns.
Too many puns for this week. We'll report back after the international break. We'll go and get another beer first from the long haul. We'll get another Stiegel. You know where to order those if you're outside of Austria, because we told you already. And yes, we wish you a good day, and we'll see you next week.